Hello and welcome to this new episode of the ISCN podcast, the podcast on smart urban development by the International Smart Cities Network. My name is Leah Hemmetsberger and I'm looking forward to this and the following podcasts because we will dive into urban digital twins. We start this mini-series off with Marcel Duffers from the city of Utrecht in the Netherlands. Why? Because together with Amsterdam, they've developed a digital twin that allows you to not just see your city in 3D, but it also lets you take a peek of what happens below the street level. How this came to be? Join us in the conversation with Marcel. Marcel, it's such a pleasure to have you today on our podcast. And let's dive, I would say, right into it. Marcel, tell us, who are you? Tell us about yourself.
Now, my name is Marcel Duffers. I work as a program manager, digital twinning in Utrecht. But my career started first my study. I studied electronics in Eindhoven. And my first career was, I started my career at Schlumberger in Holland. In France, they said Schlumberger, but in Germany, they say Schlumberger. It's an oil company. And there I started with parts of electronics in the oil business. But very fast, I saw the developing of ICT networking. So I quitted at Schlumberger and I started to work for an ICT company working for big companies and big cities. And that was also the reason why I think almost 15 years ago, I made the switch to work for that ICT company, to work for bigger cities in the Netherlands. So I started in Eindhoven, for sure, because I did my study and I live in Eindhoven. And the last 6 years now, I work for the city of Utrecht. So it's the fourth city of the Netherlands. It's still a small city, but when you compare it to Germany or other European countries. But so now I'm working already for 6 years in Utrecht. I started as an information manager, and that means that I'm more busy with how to work with what kind of systems. But a couple of years ago, I had interest in what I do now, developing digital twinning functionality. So, but I will tell more about it later.
Marcel, I really like sort of how you found your way into the city and sort of how you started out and how you then ended up working for the city and directly for the city. Can you tell us a bit more? What do you do as a digital twin program manager?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm a program manager starting at the beginning of this year. So what I told earlier, I was information manager before, but that was, I had a team and both with, when you are a team leader, you're not about the technology part. Eh? It's more about how are the people working in the office. But now I'm the last 2 years, I was more developing and I said to my manager, it's not a good combination to have a complete team and to be in a development like a digital twin. So I switched from information manager to program manager. And that means that I have to organize it myself, but we have to start to get from a development to something what's really used in our office. Because a development is only a small part and we use it with not so many people, but now we're going to scale up to use it in our organization and to do really things with it. So that's a different. And so I have to organize it myself from the bottom because there was no program manager digital twin. And that means, you have a difficult agenda than you are when you are an information manager.
Yeah. So you will be, if I understand correctly, coordinating sort of also with the other units within the city of Utrecht, trying to find out what are their requirements, the use cases that you can sort of use the digital twin for that you've developed.
Yes, that's true. And how we use the capacity we have and the financial part we have. Mm. So I have a steering group, and I have to report them what we are doing, why we are doing this, and what's the planning of that. So because we have now some stakeholders who say, okay, it's okay that you are the program manager now, but you have to inform us what you are doing, and we have to decide if it's the wrong way or the right way. So it's another job.
Yeah, so you shifted more or less from the technical development to also making sure that the technology, the digital twin, is also financially sustainable in the long run.
Yes.
And that it's financially embedded sort of in the city. That's pretty cool. And I would love to come back to this later on for sure, if we can, if we have the time. Before we dive into sort of the nitty-gritty details of the digital twin in Utrecht, I would be keen to know, in the real world, what's your favorite place in Utrecht and why?
My favorite place is, we call it the Oude Gracht, and it's one of the oldest channels of Utrecht. Mm-hmm. And the city of Utrecht, last year, the city of Utrecht was 900 years old. So my favorite part in the city is the old part, the historical part of Utrecht. And so we have a lot of modern buildings, and that's very nice and impressive. I like also architecture, but the old part of the city, 900 years old. It, also in summer, it's nice to be there. It's a nice area with some cafes, and you can easy walk over there. So that's what I prefer. But it was also a place where I said, when we like to develop a digital twin, it's not only interesting for new buildings, to build a new part of the city, but is it also possible to get old information in a digital twin? So that's the reason why we choose also the historical city, and we use another technology to develop that part in the digital twin, instead of that we get building information models, new models of new buildings. So, but that's the nicest part in my opinion.
That's very cool. I'm happy to see that you say, as a local sort of yourself, that the old town is the favorite part of you. I visited Utrecht a couple of years ago to visit a friend, and I really enjoyed the old town as well. It was just so livable and walkable, and it was just such a nice, inner city to be in. I really enjoyed it as well. So happy to hear that also the locals enjoy it and not just the tourists. You just mentioned that sort of the old town already exists as a digital replica in your digital twin. And maybe we can dive into it here a little bit. What does the digital twin actually mean for the city of Utrecht? Why did you sort of embark on this journey to create the city in a digital environment, or replicate it in a digital environment?
There are different choices we made in the past. And when you see the historical center of Utrecht has also a lot of more than 600 underground cellars. Near the old Gracht, there are also restaurants, but they are built in underground cellars. So that means that it's important for the city to know where those cellars are and what the size of those cellars are, but also what's the situation in those cellars. Because you can imagine that some of those cellars are now rented in Airbnb, but at the same time there are some heavy carriers going over the surface, and what's gonna happen when we don't know anything about the quality of the cellars of the or the road above? So there is a kind of a risk in those very nice underground cellars, and we have more. But I also told more than 600. So what it's one of the reasons why we have such an attention of the digital twin in our historical center is about those cellars. And on the other way, Utrecht is one of the fastest growing cities in the Netherlands. And that means that we have a lot of plans, and our urban planning agenda is very high. But it also means that we get, we have to find and to show what are the challenges when we're going to build, let's say, the coming years, 60,000 apartments in Utrecht. Yeah, what does that mean for our old center? What does it mean for our central station? What does it mean for recreation areas? What does it mean for other people in the city? So with our digital twin, we can visualize and we can show scenarios. What if? So we can show scenarios when we're going to build this area like this. These are the consequences. So we can show scenarios and we can do simulations in our city. It's very, very low profile on this moment because, yeah, we are not further with our digital twin and we don't have more experience. But that's the reason why we went on with the development of the digital twin. It's very interesting for our decision makers. They don't make decisions with the digital twin right now because it's an innovation, it's a technology push, and yeah, it's very new also for our decision makers, for our board. But now we're starting slowly to show them what's possible and what the possibilities are from our digital twin when making new decisions. So we use it in the old part and we use it in the new part.
That's super interesting, honestly. And when you started out saying that sort of the first idea to create a digital twin or use case on top of a digital twin actually starts underground, which is usually not the typical sort of use case in a digital twin because everyone wants to see buildings in 3D. But when you first showed it to me, when we had our call, I think it's a year ago, right? I remember that, and this is what really fascinated me because I hadn't seen this before. When you open sort of the Utrecht twin on the website, and that's also for everyone who listens right now, you can go to Utrecht 3D and you can check out the Utrecht twin by yourself as a citizen. So you can just go there. When you open it, you have this magnifying glass that sort of goes over the street and lets you look into the ground, basically.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Does that come from this use case of the sellers, or was that, or did that come from somewhere else?
It was because it's possible, and it's developing a kind of technology to look with a glass underground. So that's we use it for sewing pipes, and that we have in the Netherlands we have a national data set of sewing pipes. So we can show them in the digital twin, but we can use the same technology to show underground cellars, but also historical parts. It was not about what do we like to show, all the things we like to show, but what kind of technology do you have to use or do develop to show things underground. And that's also the combination with the technology we use. We use a Unity game engine, and this is a standard functionality in the game engine from Unity. So that makes it very easy to use. But we have one example, and I showed you that example. And we use this example in when we give a presentation inside, and then our managers said, okay, is it also possible to show something else underground? Yes, that's possible, and that was the reason why one of the managers said, I'm responsible for to find and to show 600 underground cellars. Can you help me? So that was the start of that project.
Nice. I mean, this also shows how important it is to sort of involve the colleagues from other units early on and show them what's possible and to sort of get them on board and collect all the ideas that you can do in the future with it.
That's true. Yeah.
Was it hard for you and your team to convince your colleagues in the other units of, of how to use a digital twin in Utrecht or to use a digital twin in Utrecht at all?
Yeah, let's say When you start with working with a digital twin, you start with some believers. Eh? You start with some people who say that's interesting and it's an innovation. So we are organized in the city to manage and to manage the city and to start with projects and to finish projects. But this is an innovation. So we started with nothing and we didn't know where to go. So. And that's a difficult discussion with our management. And that's not only in Utrecht, that is also in Amsterdam. And that will all be also be in other cities. But because we started with that innovation and we started with a game engine, we sat with a small group. We do it with a small budget, almost nothing. We've got some money here and there, some... It was not so much. And we started to develop our first digital twin. And after that, we did a lot of presentations and discussions in our organization, but outside with other companies. And when we showed the digital twin, our management said, okay, now we understand what you are meaning with a 3D model of the city and with extra data sets, we can show more information in the digital twin. But at the beginning, when we had nothing, it was a very difficult discussion. And it had nothing to do with the people who work in Utrecht, but we are not organized. We are a managing organization and a project organization. And when you start a complete new innovation lab, yeah, that's a discussion. But that's finished that discussion. And now I'm official a program manager of Digital Twin Utrecht. So it took some energy and it took some discussions, but it worked.
That's cool to hear. And I also like how you sort of approached it, that you were not sort of discouraged after the first discussions when, you know, people were not so really sure about what is this going to be? Do we want to invest in this? But that you continued with, as you say, little budget. I actually would be interested to hear what little budget means. I don't know if you can share that with us.
Yes, at the beginning, we started with, I think, 2 or 3 times 25,000 euros. And that was not for licensing, because that's the difference between using extended software like S3 software or Bentley software or AutoCAD software. You have to spend a lot of money to use the licenses of the software, and then you still have nothing. But we started with the Unity software, and we pay $4,000 a year, and then we can develop with a whole team in our digital twin. Everyone in the city, also our department, but also citizens in the city, they can use it for free. What we develop, they can use it for free. So it's a big difference when you compare it to what I said, S3 or AutoCAD or Bentley. We calculate that for Utrecht, and that means that when we like to make a digital twin with Esri software, that will cost us 300,000 euros a year, and then we still have to learn how to work with it. So, no, this was a choice, and it was not a very big study to find out what kind of platform like we start. We asked some students from our university in Utrecht. When you should start with a digital twin, what kind of software do you want to use? And they find out in a couple of weeks that now, when we like to start, I think on this moment the Unity software is most interesting, because it's a gaming software. It's not so expensive, and it's the same as Unreal. It's an it's software with future possibilities, and so that's the reason why we started with Unity.
Nice. I mean, that's cool. We're already sort of diving really deep into some development stuff. I like how you also involved students. I think this is also another example on sort of how to start with a little budget maybe as well, but also to really bring, you know, the universities and the young people into it. And I think this, I don't know, what was your experience with that? Did you also involve them in another way, like just in the initial part, or are you continuously evolving
We still, because it's most of the cities in the Netherlands, but also I hear that in Munich, in Germany, and also in Madrid, most of the cities use Esri software. So we have a lot of colleagues, they work already 10 or 15 years with Esri software. But when we decided to develop based on a Unity engine and its gaming software, we find some connections with the university in Utrecht, with the university in Amsterdam, with some high schools in Utrecht. So we made a connection with that schools, and we went to their marketplace to when because they like to do a traineeship in companies. So we went to the marketplace, and we gave a presentation of what we are doing in the city of Utrecht with designing a digital twin. And yeah, that was the moment that some students said, and now a lot of students said, that's very interesting, because we didn't know that a city as Utrecht was developing a digital twin based on gaming software, because those students are developing all kind of apps and games based on Unity and based on Unreal, but not for social things in to use. So a digital twin for using for urban planning, that was not in their mind. And so you have two kind of students, the students who like to earn a very fast a BMW, or students who like to do something for the city. So, and those students, we have now already, I think we had already five or six students from the high school in Utrecht, and we have students from the university. So our team is also based on most of the time two or three students in a year. So we need them. And I also say in internal, those are our next colleagues, because the world is changing, and using Esri software is shrinking, and we're going to use more and more this kind of technology, AI and gaming technology, to make building blocks for our digital twin. So we are lucky.
You are definitely lucky, but yeah. You also took the right approach, as it seems, because you know, by sort of taking this open innovation approach, by involving students, by developing a proof of concept with little budget, you're not just convincing people in your own city administration and decision makers and colleagues, but you're also convincing those who want to contribute to sort of the society by working for the city. You attracted new talent, and you are attracting, you know, constantly new talent. I think this is really, really nice. And, you know, for everyone who listens right now, you know, you might try, if you have a university in your city, just involve students very early on. It might help you. That's super nice. When we come back a little bit to the beginnings of the digital twin, you mentioned it before that you started a collaboration with Amsterdam.
Yes.
And I was wondering, how did that came to be? Like, who made the first step? When did you talk about digital twins? Like, can you remember sort of these first talks?
It didn't start officially. We have some colleagues in our bigger cities, and we have contacts with the four biggest cities in the Netherlands. So that's Rotterdam, The Hague, Amsterdam, and Utrecht. Every quarter of a year we have a discussion with each other, and it was about not really in the beginning about let's make a digital twin together, but what are the projects, what you are doing with urban planning, because most of the time urban planning starts of it's working in 2D. And let's say 3 years ago, I think almost 3 years ago, we had a discussion with Amsterdam, and they also were thinking about using other technology than the expensive technology what we have on this moment. So, and we had the same vision, and that was also important for us. We can buy something, or we can develop something with new technology, and we don't develop it only for Amsterdam and Utrecht. Well, we're gonna develop it for the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. So that was a mission we had, and a vision we had, And that was different from some other developments in other big cities. They said, okay, we're also going to develop something. And we don't all have to do the same thing. Eh? It's important. Eh? We have more than 300 municipalities in the Netherlands. And I think there are only 10 cities who can afford them to develop something like this. Mm-hmm. But we were the only one who said, we're going to develop it for the complete the Netherlands. So for all the 342 municipalities. I know you have in Germany a lot of more municipalities, but we only have 342. And that was also the start of that. We said, let's do that together. We have some experience and we have some talents and you have some experience and talents. And we started in one team. So it's not that we develop a part in Amsterdam and a part in Utrecht and we click it together. We have one developing team. And every Wednesday it's working together face to face in Amsterdam. And the other week we work together in Utrecht. So that's how we work together already then more than two years on this moment. So. And it's an agile way of working, and it's there is a stand-up, and they make decisions. What are we going to develop? So it's we have product owners. They know how to work, mm-hmm. and most of those guys and girls in that team are not from the municipality. They are hired, and those are students. So It works very well and very fast, and they do the right things. And the product owners, they decide together with the stakeholders, what do we like to develop and why? And they build it.
I think I've never heard this from a city administration. No? I have to be completely honest, no. So you are working based on agile principles.
Yeah.
In sprints, you're meeting every week face to face, on site, either in Utrecht or in Amsterdam. And you basically, if I understand correctly, you create a joint backlog and then you work off the backlog items based on the product owner's work to, get new requirements out of the colleagues, out of the team. So you are completely doing software development based on Agile within the city administrations.
Exactly. Yes, that's how we work.
That's pretty cool, I have to say. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, doing Agile, but I think not many city administrations have managed to sort of organize this like that. Have you done sort of this kind of software development internally already, or is this something that you really started doing when working on the digital twin?
Yeah, this is the first time that we do it like this. Yes, that's true.
Okay.
So it's also a big experience for Utrecht, mm-hmm. and for Amsterdam it's not so a big experience because they had already they did some exercises and they have mm-hmm. some experience with working with an agile team, and it works. And we also say we stay with a team with a maximum of 10 persons, because when we get more people who like to be joined, then we say we have to organize it in another way. But this is how it works very well. And that's how we work. And this was my first experience, and it worked. So in a next project, we can do maybe the same. Yeah.
That's really nice. What I would be interested as well, and maybe also some of our listeners who work in a city, is how do you get the mandate to sort of work together with this other city in this very regular exchange? And also based on this, how do you organize the budget to sort of do this collaboratively with the city, with another city? That would be super interesting, I guess, for also others. I hope.
Yeah.
I hope also for others.
Don't ask too much, and organize in an informal circuit money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how we started. I have a good network in our organization, but also outside our organization. Mm-hmm. I have some good contacts at the national level. So there are some ministries, they are doing some projects and they have some budgets. And I have good contacts with them. And when we started, what I already said, we started with three times 25,000 euros. And then we made, I think, our complete a basic digital twin. And we participated in some national projects where they also had some money to develop in 3D. So we made a proposal for we are also developing in 3D for and because our vision is we do it for the whole of the Netherlands, and then they also say at national level, okay, that's interesting, we like to support you for some money, and then you go further. But working in an agile team, that was never a discussion, or I never start that discussion in our organization, because it's a difficult discussion, I think. So we had some capacity and some students to start with a small team, and we did it.
And you grew from there. You established sort of the working experience. I guess it sounds like you learned then also a lot from Amsterdam. I guess there was also some kind of knowledge transfer. And sort of helping you guys get started on working agile within sort of the city administration context.
Yes.
And then off you went.
and we still learn a lot from each other every day.
Nice.
So that's it's based on trust, and it's based on loyalty, and it's based on not on rules and on governance, because that part of the project is we keep it in the corner.
But I find it really great how you just went out and started doing stuff, and then once you have the first results, you just take it out there to use it as leverage. What comes out from what I've seen is really pretty impressive. Again, my recommendation to everyone who listens, check it out on the Utrecht website and also the Amsterdam website. For me, when we take a step back to the beginnings, and I think you already mentioned it a little bit, because you said like you were, as a basis, you were using the Unity game engine. What do you need for a digital twin specifically? I mean, you need people to develop on top of it. So you need developers, you need experts in this regard.
Yeah.
You need the basis in terms of technology, but what else is there?
I think the most important part is reliable and up-to-date data, because we generate a digital twin, we don't modulate a digital twin. So we don't have to develop, let's say the base of the Unity code and the C sharp code, what we use for a digital twin, is already developed. But now we have to make the connection via API connectors or 3D tiles with reliable and up to date data. So now we have every time when we have a discussion or about is it possible to get a fresh air data in the digital twin, or mobility data or energy data in the digital twin? Yes, everything is possible. But then we need a reliable data set, actual data set, and you are yourself responsible for the data. We are not responsible for all the data we show and we make combinations with. And that's also what we are doing now. The code and the innovation we developed is free to use on the GitHub. We put that on the GitHub, so it's free to everyone in Europe. And we also discuss that with Unity, so that's covered. But now you can start to make a combination with your own data, to make a connection with your own data in the digital twin. So, but that still means that you need up-to-date data, and you are yourself responsible for the data. So we can't, it's impossible for us to recognize, is it right or wrong what we are visualizing, or that's what they do, what they have to do themselves. But so our digital twin now is based on three important data sets. We have it's a national data set of 3D buildings. We call it the 3D Bach. And we have a surveys data set, and that's based on a 2D data set with a point cloud combination. It's a calculation, and then it makes a 3D surface data set. And then we have every city in the Netherlands has an administration of its own trees. So we administrate our trees, and every 3 years we look if the tree is still there, is it growing, is it already dead. So and that's also a data set what is published in our digital twin. Mm-hmm. That's are the three ingredients of our digital twin, and with the technology we generate automatically a digital twin.
That's pretty nice. For the 3D data set, you said it was available from the Dutch national level, basically. So this is available for the whole of Netherlands.
Yes.
How is it with the 2D point cloud? Is it something you generated yourself, or is it also available on
that's
national
also
level?
As a national data set. We call it the RHN. It's a national data set. We have a national cadaster. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you also have that in Germany, but we have a national cadaster, and all those data sets are available on their site. So we collect them, and we use the 3D tiles in an API connector. Now they recently developed a API connector, so we can get that information in our digital twin. So we have a Unity game engine. We have a C# code what we mm-hmm. Developed, and then we make a connection with some data sets. And where they are in the world, that's not the issue, but we make a connection with the data sets and we generate automatically a digital twin.
And then it depends on what kind of data you want to integrate.
Yes.
You can basically get in everything that you want.
Yes. Yeah,
nice.
In the beginning, now we have a static digital twin based on static data.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have also in our department some questions about we have a lot of sensors in our city,
mm-hmm.
and also in other places, is it possible to view those data, dynamic data, in a digital twin? Yes, for sure, that is possible. Only we have to figure out how we visualize that data, because when you get a continuous streaming of data, yeah, how are you going to collect that data? How are you going to make snapshots of the data that's the way of viewing, but that's a discussion what we have with our students and our mm-hmm. specialists. They say, oh, okay, we can do it like this or do it like this. You have to choose. So it's not a question if it is possible, but do we have the capacity and somebody can make features to show that to visualize data in information.
All right, so there's definitely still plenty of room for development.
Of room.
Plenty of ideas, plenty of room for development. And if I understand correctly, so what you've developed just now is available as open source for everyone
yes.
to use in Europe for now. But I assume if somebody from outside would ask and sort of get into discussion, there could potentially be opportunities.
I have to correct you, because it's not open source, it's open code.
It's open code.
Yeah, there's a difference. Eh? When we use Unity
mm-hmm.
and we use C#, but that's open. We produce open code with that software, and we are also developing and trying to make it also with Cesium and with Unreal. So mm-hmm. it's not about the digital twin, but it's about the way of working and how mm-hmm. do we visualize data in information. So we had some time, we were a data-driven organization, and every time when they said, yeah, we are data-driven, I said, and what does that mean? Yeah, it's based on data. Okay, that's interesting, but a few of my colleagues understand all that data, but when we make information of that data, then it mm-hmm. becomes more a product where you can say, okay, we can have a discussion about what we see. But only data, yeah, it's not so much worth for me.
That's true. You have to make something out of data. You have to refine it, and you have to use it. You have to make it a good quality data as well. One question, because you said you're using open code and not open source. Can you explain, sort of as simple as possible, what the difference between the two is?
The difference in our way, we are using an standing game engine, so it's developed by Unity. And when you develop a game with Unity software and you make a lot of money with that software, then you have to pay serious license. But Unity says we have a game engine, and that's developed by and the owner is Unity. But when you have open source like QGIS, what we also use now instead of Esri, you don't have to pay for the license of to use that software. But the other way is when we have serious questions about the working of that software, there is no company who you can ask. And now we can say to Unity, okay, we are not making money with it. We use it for the right way, for our city, for our citizens. And we always can ask them because we pay $4,000 a year to use the software. So the difference is, and the open code, that means that we can call some organization when there is something wrong. What's the development program for the coming years, or do they have some other things that we have to know? But that also means that every time when we get a question, and we also have that question from Unic, is it possible to get complete open source software? Yeah, when we can find complete open source software and we can get the experience with that software, we like to switch to that kind of platform, but we don't know that on this moment. So when there is a city or a company, I think a city who said, "Now we did it the same, but we did it based on open source software," we like to get that experience.
Yeah, but basically everything that you developed on top, so together with Amsterdam, that you publish openly as open code, and everyone is sort of free to use it on top of.
Yeah, that's true.
Unity,
that's true.
In that case. All right, so it's this combination of two approaches basically that you're bringing together.
And we used we tried to get all the standards we have in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. That we that's based on those national standards and also those worldwide standards. The OGC standard we also use. So that means that everything what we develop it can be used in the Netherlands, and what we test also in Munich and in Madrid, it also works in Europe, but it probably also used on other parts of the world.
Nice. So here's the encouragement. Check out the GitHub and see if you can make something out of it and contribute to it back maybe as well. We will also put all the links into the description of this podcast, so you don't have to look far when you listen to this now and think like, where can I get the information? When we come back to sort of organizing a project like this, what you told me right now was like everything worked out fine and, you know, we got into it, we learned a lot. When you say we learned a lot, was there something that you really stumbled across where you said, like, please, anyone else out there, don't do the same mistake as we did? Is there something that you can share in this regard?
Yeah, for sure. But not on the technical part. I think we have a team and they make the right decisions based on what we are doing now. But I think next time I will involve our management at the start of such an innovation, because it took me a lot of energy and a lot of time to get them on board. And normally when you are starting with such an innovation, you don't let leak too much energy in management, because it delivers nothing. Let me say like that. But so the next time when I do such an innovation, I start to involve the management and say, okay, these are our ideas, and this is our planning for the coming years, and this is what we like to do. And that's not a guarantee that it works always, but that's what I should do in a different way next time. But technical, I think we had on the right time the connections departments in our organization, mm-hmm. departments outside our organization, and now we are upscaling, yeah, because what I told yes. earlier, we started with 3D Amsterdam and 3D Utrecht, and last February we did an upscale to Netherlands 3D. So we have already the same technology for the whole of the Netherlands. We don't have big communication about that because we first really want to be sure that it works 100%, and that's on this moment. But there are some functionalities who are already working in Amsterdam 3D and Utrecht 3D, but is not incorporated in Netherlands 3D. But so we have already a digital twin for every municipality in the Netherlands, and that's a nice point to get. And the next step is not to go to the whole of the Europe, because that's not the most important for us. But it's interesting for us when we have connections with other mm-hmm. European cities. When we like to do some European calls to get money to develop other things. And also the European Commission says, what you are doing in the Netherlands, that's very interesting for the whole of Europe. Because we spend already a lot of money in all kind of pilots, but after those pilots, it stops. And there almost never are copies to other cities. And that's what they said in the beginning. Okay, we're going to develop mm-hmm. something. And when it's ready, we made a copy to other cities in Europe. But practical, you see, we've forgotten to make those copies in the rest of Europe.
But when we talk about copies in Europe, I mean, and you mentioned it just now, European projects, that's a thing for those who are outside of Europe. The European Commission or other funding bodies, they usually take some money into the hand to support projects like Twins for Resilience. And that is a project that you recently started together with Amsterdam, definitely. Yes. Who else, right? Yeah. The city of Brussels in Belgium, with the city of Rennes in France, with Dublin in Ireland. But we also have many other smaller cities in Luxembourg. And I can't even name them all. There are quite a lot of cities actually involved. Sorry to those that I don't mention now. What's the goal of the project? What do you hope to achieve then? Is it this what you just mentioned, like not ending at a pilot, but really getting it out there? Or what do you want to achieve with the project?
It's an Interreg project, and that means that we're gonna develop a training program for different skills. So for urban planners, in Utrecht and Amsterdam, we're gonna use it for urban planners, because in Amsterdam has 200 urban planners and Utrecht has 60 urban planners. And our goal is end of this year that 30% of those urban planners know what the digital twin is and how to use it. But those urban planners, they also are always involved with participation in the city. Yeah? When there is a big urban development, most of the time in the Netherlands, we do participation with the citizens. It's also a rule in this moment, it's the law, so we have to, but we did it already earlier in Utrecht. And that means that citizens also, but in our case, urban planners, they have to know and they have to learn, and we have to learn them. So we have to develop a training program, how to work with a digital twin, and how to get the participation with the citizens. So for example, when you're gonna plan a new building, and we have some plans in Utrecht of very high buildings, so sun and shadow is important in that case, and the digital twin is very nice to use for that. And so but you have to learn how to work with it. So the next 3 years we're going to develop with those six cities one trainings program on different levels, how to use a digital twin and what's in it for you when you use a digital twin. And it's not about the technology.
That's to mention. No, great. I mean, this is pretty cool. And it leads me already to the next question that I have for you. Basically, everyone I'm talking to in urban development, in smart cities, smart region, in, you know, digitalization for cities and regions overall, they talk about urban digital twins. What do you personally think makes urban digital twins so popular?
Now, at the first place, because it's possible, you can develop a digital twin on your own laptop. So a couple of years ago, you need a complete power computer somewhere in the city, and that's not necessary anymore. It's a web-based technology on this moment, so it's not even on one power computer. It's on the web, and that's how we develop. But yeah, we live practical in a 3D world. Every day we live in a 3D world, and we did urban planning, I think 50 years or 70 years now, 50 years in a 2D world. So it's strange that, of it's not strange, but it's normally, in my opinion, that we're gonna make the 3D transition to a 3D world. And we see that already in our 3D companies and our 3D and our city planning companies. They work already in BIM models and in 3D models and in complete holographic worlds. They produce it, and they show the customers all kind of visions on that way of working. But when you go to a city, it's not all 2D, but most of the time we make decisions on this moment in 2D. So that's the reason why I'm not only a believer, but I'm convinced that the 3D world is going further and further. And now we're talking about the digital twin, but the next step is the cityverse and the megaverse, metaverse. I'm not sure if it really becomes to a metaverse, because that's a really hype. Yeah, there are some GIS software companies who built already some gaming software engines, and also Unity bought already some GIS companies. So, and that's not for small money; they pay serious money. So, and that not really means that the metaverse is the future, I think. But I'm convinced that we're going to make the transition from 2D world to a 3D world. That's for sure for me. And I think the next step will be a cityverse kind of working. But we have too much challenges in the city, and we can't view that, and we can't decide that anymore in a 2D world. That's impossible. So we need a layers in a 3D world. And that's what we are doing right now. And that's what... we have the experience and we have the technology to do that. We need only some capacity to work it out and to make new building blocks for all kind of challenges in the city.
Honestly, I think this is the perfect sentence to close it off. Thank you so much, Marcel, for taking the time to be on this podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. Thank you for sharing all your insights, your, you know, learnings that you had from, you know, the start of the digital twin to where you are now. And as far as I can see, there is so much more to come out of this collaboration between the city of Utrecht, where you work, and the city of Amsterdam. We will make sure to include all the links to the twin that you can access, to the GitHub, also to Twins for Resilience, for those who want to be, or for those who want to follow this project, and to follow also maybe the training sessions if there are some publicly available ones. At this stage, thank you for what you're doing at the city. I think this is what makes city administration, urban planning really interesting. And I'm so curious to see where we are in the next year or two. Thanks so much, Marcel.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So what we've learned today is that agile software development can also work for city administrations, even in cooperation with other cities. As Marcel said, you just have to start and learn from those who are already more experienced. In Utrecht, this plan worked well for developing their Utrecht 3D digital twin. What were the key ingredients? In short, a can-do attitude involving different stakeholders like students and other city units in the process. And lastly, take it step by step. I hope this chat with Marcel was as insightful for you as it was for me. See you in the next episode of the ISCN podcast for more hands-on insights on everything smart for urban development.